eyes. But except for our Islamabad office and tenant, we knew that the ISI was not the answer, certainly not when our homeland was at stake. The interests of the United States and Pakistan were often similar, but not enduringly congruent. Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage understood this. He had delivered a hard and clear message to Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf, who had responded with operational and political support for our efforts against AQ. The ISI and others, however, still did not accept our intent to overthrow the Taliban leaders if they did not turn against AQ. Some in the CIA, suffering from a case of clientitis, didn't either. I continued to push against this resistance, knowing full well that ISI would not deliver, and then we would move forward. It did not take long. On 1 October, I visited the Pentagon, where I met with Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, and the new chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Myers. We all attended a video conference that included General Franks in Tampa and U.S. government representatives in Islamabad. As expected, U.S. officials in Pakistan expressed Pakistani hopes that once the bombing campaign began, the Taliban could be pressed into handing over AQ leadership. Tenet had not ruled this out, but I stewed over what seemed to me a complete waste of time. Our officials in Pakistan talked about the possibility of North-South civil war in Afghanistan, with Tajiks, Uzbeks, and others fighting Pashtuns, among whom the Taliban had their support. This, of course, was a real possibility, and underscored the need to bring Pashtun tribes into the fight against the Taliban. But the threat of Afghan civil war was not an excuse to wait for the ISI to drag the Taliban to the negotiating table and hope they would deliver AQ. That simply would not happen. Rumsfeld said that Pakistan could not convince the Taliban to hand over AQ. Wolfowitz tended to agree. Myers said little. After the video conference, Rumsfeld asked me what I thought. I told him that he was right, and the U.S. representatives in Islamabad were wrong. Rumsfeld seemed to like that. I wondered what he would do with that scrap of internal CIA dissonance. I also told the DOD leadership team that I was traveling to Tampa in a couple of days to meet with General Franks. But first, the next morning, I made a secure phone call to a friend overseas. Karzai. The connection was clear, from CIA HQS all the way to a small outpost in Pakistan near the Afghan border. Greg, what the hell are you doing? I'm waiting for you to unfuck Washington and get my skinny ass into Afghanistan. What's taking so long? Your boss, in part, I answered and added some detail. Our representatives in Islamabad were in charge of all CIA operations and personnel in-country, and that included Greg. My uncoordinated phone call to Greg was at best impolitic. His field command and the Near East Division frowned on any circumvention of their authorities. I didn't belabor the point about Greg's chain of command. Greg understood without my having to outline the internal conflict explicitly. I just wanted Greg to know that he was essential to our plan in the South, which was essential to our entire strategy. I'll get you into Afghanistan. Just hang in there for now. What's the story with Karzai? Greg provided a short, clear brief. Karzai needed our support, both political and material. I told Greg to provide Karzai whatever he wanted. I would start laying the groundwork for Director Tenet and our policymakers as we sought their concurrence for Greg's plans. Hamid Karzai's father had been the leader of the Popalzai branch of the Pashtun tribe. The Taliban had executed him years ago. Karzai, an erudite successor to his father's political position, desperately wanted to exact revenge against the Taliban and liberate his country. He understood that in the wake of 9/11, the United States must counterattack. He understood the opportunity. At my direction, Greg solicited Karzai's view, which informed our own planning. Greg also provided Karzai an outline of our plan and demonstrated our commitment to him and his tribe with a large chunk of cash. A few days later, in October 2001, with a couple $1 million in his bag, Karzai infiltrated from Pakistan into southern Afghanistan on a motorcycle. Unescorted, evading Taliban roadblocks, he exercised talent and courage in reaching his hometown of Tarin Kaut. With U.S. funding and his persuasive leadership, he started recruiting his tribesmen to form a militia. He promised them U.S. support. His tribesmen hated the Taliban, but their motivation was insufficient without a means to wage war. Greg kept badgering me. He wanted to join Karzai. Greg wanted to demonstrate that the United States offered more than money and promises. We both understood that the Afghans would begin to trust us only if we were with them in the fight, side by side. I told him to wait, explaining that the White House required a clear understanding of our plan, which we were still slapping together, hour by hour. During another meeting in the White House's Situation Room, chaired by President George W. Bush, CIA Director George Tenet and I outlined the political situation. I explained to the President and the NSC principals that Karzai was endorsed by the Northern Alliance leaders. I knew this because I had asked them directly. The ethnic Uzbeks, Tajiks, Turkmen, and Hazara agreed. Karzai was the only political leader who could pull together the non-Pashtun and Pashtun areas of the country. Without Karzai and his men capturing Kandahar, the Taliban's urban stronghold, our chances for a unified Afghanistan against the Taliban were remote. The President and the others, of course, had never heard of Karzai. They asked questions. I answered. They took our advice. Director Tenet and I raced back to CIA HQS in his motorcade. We agreed that we'd gotten what we needed. I told the director that I would unleash Greg. Tenet, with his gnawed, unlit cigar clamped in his teeth, just grunted. Within an hour of the White House meeting, I was back in my HQS office. I transmitted an eyes-only cable directly to Greg, nobody else. I wanted a written record. It was a simple message. POTUS concurs. Please proceed. Greg did not need any detailed operational order, nor did he need a planning staff. I had already informed him of his mission, or, to be more accurate, he had outlined his proposed mission and I had agreed. He simply wanted a clear objective and the resources to get there. He also wanted Kofor and me to support him in HQS and Washington, but he never asked us. He knew that was our duty. Berntsen and Betsy. To organize and support the field teams from HQS, I asked Gary Berntsen to take the lead. Gary had worked for me in CTC. In March 2000, I had sent him into Afghanistan on a high-risk mission, so he knew our allies and they knew him. He spoke Farsi, Dari. He was also a fierce operator with an unconventional, sometimes ruthless approach to counterterrorism. I love the guy. He stormed into my office. His nostrils expanded and contracted like a bull searching for something to bash. He had left his overseas COS job to join us, but only after Kofor and I intervened with Gary's reluctant division chief. "Hi, Gary, have a seat." He forced himself to sit. He leaned forward, thick arms on his knees. "You've already talked to Massey?" "Yes, sir." "Good. Then you know. Take care of all the field teams. Give them whatever they want. Our HQS job is to support the field. Then in a few weeks you'll replace Schroen in the Panjshir. Glad you're here. We need you." "You got it." He stood almost at attention. His brow wrinkled, his jaw clenched, his thick neck bulged, his head thrust forward. He then barked in his Long Island accent, "Thank you for the opportunity to serve under your command. And, sir, we will destroy these motherfuckers." John and I wanted the officers providing HQS support to the field eventually to be assigned to the field themselves. We intentionally devised the personnel system for maximum service to the field. Our ops guys in HQS were supporting our ops guys in the field, and soon their roles would be reversed. We wanted cross-cutting incentives at the most elemental levels of both mission and personal survival. Intelligence was the foundation for everything we did. Betsy served as the chief of all our intelligence requirements, collection, and dissemination. A no-nonsense clandestine service reports officer with 20 years on the job, she whipped together a diverse mix of officers. Their mission was to ascertain and rationalize the intelligence requirements. These questions ranged from the tactical to the strategic. Where was the enemy in a particular valley? What was their order of battle, their weapons? The status of their alliance with the local Afghan tribes? Which Afghan tribal leaders, allied with